This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Actor Steven Yeun's big break was landing a role on the hugely popular zombie apocalypse show The Walking Dead. Yeun played Glenn, a fan favorite. The Walking Dead is known for killing off its main characters, but Glenn did pretty well, lasting a full 6 seasons until his death, one of the show's more gruesome, in the premiere of season 7. Now Steven Yeun stars in the film Burning by Korean director Lee Chang-dong. Yeun plays Ben, a mysterious upper-class playboy in South Korea's capital, Seoul. He may or may not be murdering his girlfriends. Burning is based on a short story by Japanese novelist Haruki Murakami. Our film critic Justin Chang called the new movie the most absorbing movie he's seen this year. Yeun has also had roles in Okja and Sorry to Bother You. He spoke with Fresh Air producer Sam Brigger.
Steven Yeun, welcome to Fresh Air. So your character Ben in the movie Burning, he's very mysterious and, you know, he's open to the interpretation of the audience in a lot of ways. You can either read Ben as this kind of bored rich guy who kind of uses people, or you can read him as a potentially murderous psychopath. And the film never explicitly says which one he is. How do you approach playing someone like that?
I think the real key was that director Lee gave me a lot of my own freedom in approaching this character. But it really came down to director Lee said to me one day, maybe halfway through production, because we kept talking about the last scene, and he was saying, you know, you have to make that choice as an actor.
And about you will which make kind of person he is.
Yeah, which kind of person he is. Yeah. And you will make that choice. And when we were done filming, he was like, what choice did you make? And I told him that I wasn't going to tell him. And so even to this day, I am the only one that knows who Ben really is.
So Lee Chang-dong said that your Americanness was an asset to this role, even though your character is Korean. So what did he mean by that? And how do you understand that?
Yeah. You know, when I first approached him, I was like, is Ben Korean-American? And he was like, no. He is a fully Korean person that lives in Korea. He might have traveled. He might know the Western world. He knows knowledge of the greater world, but he's not an Korean American. And I was like, okay. So then I realized that I had a lot of work to do to, you know, really get and understand the encoding of the body of being a native currently living there Korean person. And for me as an immigrant, I know of Korea in kind of maybe images or eras. You know, my parents taught me Korea from the 80s to the 90s. That's their understanding of Korea, and that's how I grew up. But Korea's changed and evolved just like any other nation, and you're not updated on, you know, colloquialisms and vernacular and people's way of like just being with each other. And so I really thought that I had to do a lot of work with that. But he then said, let's not mess with your Americana that's kind of embedded into your body. The food that you've eaten, the choices that you've made, the way that you think, don't alter those things. Instead, just let's work on the language so that you can be unequivocally Korean, but let's leave these mysterious Western encodings in your body alone. And I think that created its inherent kind of like dissonance with that character where you don't know who or what and where he's from.
The movie is in Korean. What challenges did that present to you?
Well, fortunately, my parents sacrificed their understanding of the English language by speaking only Korean at home so that I could maintain my Korean pronunciation. And so my pronunciation has always been pretty good. I wouldn't say great, but I would say it was good. I could probably pass for a native in Korea if I'm just talking to a cab driver. They wouldn't necessarily know from my voice. But it's missing the nuance and just the way that the specificities of how Korean natives speak. And so those were the things that I had to really get into. And also my reading comprehension and my vocabulary is not very great. And so I had a lot of work to do of just like really getting into the script, especially Ben. He speaks so, I guess, highbrow, very literarily.
When did you discover that you wanted to act?
I don't know if there was like a specific moment, but I think it came in college when I'd seen our school's improv group called Monkapult for our freshman orientation. And all I remember thinking was, I was like, that looks so fun. How do I do that? And I wish I could say that I made a conscious choice to pursue acting. But, you know, in the rear view, it really just seemed like I was just going like, I like this, so I'm going to do it. And then I kept liking and enjoying and growing. And I was like, I want to keep doing this. And then by the time I was done, I was all of a sudden moving to Chicago to try to get into Second City.
Which you did. So how old were you when you moved to LA?
I was 2009. I was 25.
So you started trying out for stuff. And I saw an early commercial of yours. It's this Milky Way commercial.
Oh,
well, you're like a swimmer and you're about to dive backwards into the pool, and then you dive and then you hear the squishy sound and you've actually dove into a giant pool of caramel, and you're sort of, you look like a cockroach on your back, like stuck in this caramel, like squirming around. So first of all, that was all green screen, I'm assuming, right? You didn't actually jump in a caramel.
We jumped in an actual pool. And then they actually put us in a outdoor pool filled with caramel-like substance.
Some gooey stuff.
It was disgusting. it was my welcome to Hollywood moment, where it was like, this is going to pay for your bills and this is going to pay for your life while you're trying to make ends meet and hopefully get a job. But while you're doing this, like, we're going to put you in this vat, and then afterwards we're going to hose you down with a high pressure hose in your Speedos in front of everybody. It was the most like self-ego-checked.
You look so uncomfortable.
Oh my God. Yeah. The whole experience was uncomfortable. But when you're there and you're barely scrounging enough money to like live for the next day, you're like, spray me. Like, where do you need me to jump in?
Were there any auditions where the role you were trying out for was clearly a stereotype?
I only did it one time, which was in Chicago. There was this thing called Awesome 80s Prom. And I remember going in, they asked people to prepare an 80s monologue. And so I prepared Ferris Bueller's opening monologue, and I did it. And then after I finished, they were like, can you do that with an Asian accent? And I, you know, was so nervous that I was just like, I like half-assed a performance of speaking in broken English. And then I just walked out.
Because kind of, you were in shock, kind of?
Yeah, well, you're also like, you know, back then, you know, nobody was really speaking up about this stuff. And so you're more like, is my agent going to be mad at me? Mm-hmm. Are these people never going to hire me? I don't even know what's possible for me, but I'm already going into a place where it's like, I have to be so brave and I don't even have any credits to my actual name. I remember calling my agent back and just being like, listen, I don't, they actually wanted to hire me. And I was like, I don't want to do this. Like,
did the agent know that that's what they wanted?
Yes, of course.
And hadn't told you.
And hadn't told me. Yeah. And I was like, I'm not doing it. And I remember the agent being really angry at me, being like, you know, this person is pissed off that you came in and wasted their time and did this audition when you aren't even going to do it. And I'm like, I, you know, that was just different times.
Well, your big breakthrough, obviously, was getting the role of Glenn on The Walking Dead, the hugely popular zombie apocalypse TV show. You were on the show for 7 years. Recently, you said that while you were, you know, super grateful to have that role, that as the years went on, you felt a bit cramped by Glenn as a character, and you described him as beige, like kind of a bland person. Can you explain that?
I wish I could always, you know, use better choice of words when describing things. And I, you know, I hope people that might have heard that didn't think I was hating or didn't like. But I think it was just, you know, a lot of factors. I think it was, you start at 25, you're 26, and then you grow to, you know, 32, 31, and you're not the same person that you were. When you embody a character for as long as you do, you tend to outgrow them unless they're able to grow with you. You know, the concept of even an Asian American person and a man has morphed and changed even in the last decade by a lot. You know, there's moments where people were super psyched that an Asian man was in a relationship with a white woman, and that was like a big point of victory for a moment. And then you evolve from there and you go, oh, like, that's also its own trap, where you're not looking at these people like humans. You're instead justifying these identifiers, these ethnicity things that really shouldn't necessarily be celebrated in that way. And so as you kind of process those ideas and grow as an individual, playing a character that seems like it's written in a specific way seems a little bit, you know, claustrophobic sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it was just a natural growing process of being the age that I was and the character and the show and a lot of things kind of coming together at the same time.
Well, I can't imagine that this is a spoiler at this point, but your character, Glenn, dies. Mm-hmm. It's a very gruesome death. As most people know, the show was adapted from a comic book. And although the show doesn't exactly follow the comic, you know, there's a lot of similarities. There's some major plot points that come from the comic. And in the comic, your character, Glenn, was beaten to death by a baseball bat covered in barbed wire. And it's really horrifically depicted in the comic. And so as you were playing Glenn, did you have in the back of your mind that this fate was at some point coming to you? Like, did they tell you early on that that was going to be your end? Or did you get a script one day that was like, this is your last script?
I remember Scott Gimple, who's an incredible human.
Who's a showrunner.
Showrunner at the time. He was gracious enough to sit me down even a couple of years prior to... And, you know, we were friends, so we would just be like, I'd just be like, Scott, you know, this death is going to come at some point. And, you know, I think it has to be me. It has to happen. And he's like, yeah, you know, you never know when it's going to happen. You never know if it'll happen, or you never know who it's going to happen. I can't promise you that. But then as we kept coming closer and closer, I kind of advocated for it in that way. Not because, you know, I wanted to be off the show, but because it was the end. It's written. And so that's kind of how I approached it. And Scott was really gracious to give me that headway and that lead time. And yeah, it was not a shock. It was kind of just easing into that moment.
You told your parents that you wanted to try to pursue an acting career. And they sounded like they were disappointed, but they were supportive and gave you like 2 years at it. Is that...
Yeah, I think they knew who their son was. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously they do, which is like a hot-headed, like really stubborn person. And so they knew that, you know, I was just going to do it whether they liked it or not. And so, you know, they reluctantly gave me their blessing, but not without like...
An ultimatum.
Yeah, they gave me 2 years, and they're like, you know, you got 2 years to try to do this. And then they made me get a job, which I miserably failed at while I was over there. And,
what was that?
It was inside sales at a IT consulting firm.
That's good.
That was horrible.
That's a good experience for your role, and sorry to bother you.
Yeah, very much so. Again, my parents just doing a solid for me every time. I really am going to owe them my entire career, which I do.
So was there a point when they were like, okay, you're an actor now?
I think it really happened when I got Walking Dead. Before then, they were happy to see me doing Second City and things like that, but they were always in the rear view, like, you know, go to LA, hurry up so you can just get this out of your system and come back and be a doctor. And I went to LA and I booked this show, and you know, my dad cried on the phone when I got it. And, you know, he was just like so relieved. Never did we know that it would turn into what it's turned into.
Did they watch The Walking Dead?
Oh yeah, they did.
Was it really horrifying for them to watch your death?
I don't think my mom's watched my death, actually. My mom is still yet to watch my death. And then my dad, you know, he just thinks it's funny. He's just like,
there's nothing
what?
Funny about that scene.
Yeah, he's just like, what did you do? He's like, what did you make? He's like, what a wild show.
Well, there's something really interesting that you said about this, is that your parents took this huge risk to move to the United States.
Mm.
And so they're risk takers. And so they sort of let you continue taking risks by accepting that you wanted to act.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. You know, I met with K.W. Lee one time, who is the first Asian American journalist to write for a major publication. I think when I met him, he was in his mid-90s. Mm. Incredible human being, mouth of a sailor, hilarious. He told me, never forget second generation sacrifices too. And I was just like blown away, because I was resting all myself on my parents' sacrifice to be like, oh, you guys did it. You guys were the risk takers so that you could get me this chance to be here. And when he said that, it made me really realize, like, and I was having my kid and I was just like, okay, like, I have to risk too. I have to put my neck out on the line. I have to sacrifice in that way too, to give more semblance of freedom for my child. And so, yeah, I think that extension of that, like, crazy decision to deconstruct a life that was fine. You know, we're not refugees. We're not forced out of our country. My dad just made a decision to leave because he took a business trip one time to Minnesota in the early 80s and thought that it was so great.
Must not have been in the winter time.
Yeah, right, exactly. I think he just saw land. Mm. He was like, you can own land like this? And so he was like, I want to try it. Mm. And, you know, I know the story that we get told oftentimes, which is true in the end, but what we get told is that it was all done as a sacrifice to us. But really, you know, it's just a human's way of, like, taking that risk to try to make something greater for themselves. And my dad came over on his own ambitions with my mother and brought his kids. And then eventually it did become a sacrifice because, you know, the parameters by which he was able to succeed were also limited. Mm-hmm. Because he's an immigrant. And so he succeeded as best as he could. And it would have been, I think, foolish and kind of wasteful of me to take that boldness and just bury it and say, I'm just going to be safe because you guys took the risk. And instead I said, let me do what you did.
Well, Stephen Yeun, thanks so much for coming on Fresh Air.
Thank you for having me.
Stephen Yeun stars in the new film Burning. He spoke with Fresh Air producer Sam Brigger. After we take a short break, linguist Jeff Nunberg will tell us why he chose the word nationalism as his word of the year. This is Fresh Air.